Hey everyone, we're so excited to tell you about our new membership.
We're creating exclusive After Dark episodes, monthly live Q&A and discussion calls,
and even some exclusive merch.
See all the benefits and tiers at patreon.com/glampolyam. I think while polyamory is not about sex, it doesn't mean that we should slut shame people in the polyamorous community who love sex. And yeah. So that's why, again, yeah, you can be polyamorous and a swinger.
This is Glamorous and Polyamorous,
a show about exploring polyamory and other forms of non-monogamy after religion.
I'm Kelly Smith.
And I'm Zavi Benjamin. I am so happy because we are doing a part two to our Terms You Need to Know, to our Polyamory 101 series, shall we say. And so today we're going to go over more terms that people need to know, right, about polyamory.
Yeah.
So let's get right into it. What's our first term?
First term is anger partner, or sometimes people say nesting partner.
Yeah. Which... totally missed this one from part one.
Yeah. An anger partner is usually someone you share ties with more than just, I would feel like you're in a relationship, but you share more things.
Yeah.
Like you might own a house together, you might have finances together, you're tied together somehow, and that's kind of where the anchor comes from. And nesting partner is just someone that you live with. So those are some terms to just define the relationship a little bit more and narrows it down a little bit more.
You and I have called each other anchor, nesting partner throughout the years. I have felt like that fits us because we live together, and like you said, we share finances and other life things, I guess. Do you feel like any of these terms, like either of these terms, have an implied hierarchy?
Yes, to a certain extent they do.
Okay.
Because unintentionally or not,
okay,
you are somehow tied to that person that is not easily broken of a tie, I would say.
Okay.
So it kind of hooks you together.
Yeah. Hmm. That's interesting. I mean, we're going to get into hierarchy a little bit later, but both of these terms are popular within the polyamory community to express someone that many would call a spouse, or maybe even their husband or wife. Rather than saying husband or wife, they'll use anchor or nesting partner.
Right.
I've often used that because I feel like I didn't like the connotations that kind of come with husband and wife. It feels, again, very kind of heteronormative to me.
Right.
And I want to be very clear that I'm very gay all the time.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I want to use something else. But I don't know. What has been your experience with either of these terms?
Right. I feel like you don't always have to be necessarily married to the person to be their nesting partner or even anchor partner. You can share expenses with somebody that you aren't married to. So I don't always like to use the term husband and wife either, because I feel like that has certain connotations or expectations that come with that, that don't necessarily define our relationship. So, but people automatically put you in that box again.
Yeah.
So it's, again, a way for you to choose for yourself what you want it to be.
Yeah. It's the interesting conundrum with labels.
Right.
That they can be very empowering and helpful, but at the same time, they can be a bit of a box at times that constrain us.
Yeah, they can be too narrow and not necessarily define every aspect of your relationship, but kind of gives you just a basic definition of it. Another term is kitchen table poly, which is my preferred method. I am kitchen table poly, which just means that everyone knows each other, knows of each other. All the metamors know each other, all the people that you're dating. We just kind of know each other and are friends and can be friendly and can basically sit down at a table together, at a kitchen table together.
Yeah. I think, yet again, another one of those terms that is kind of loosey-goosey on the definition, right? Because it can mean different things to different people. I think originally it meant literally that partners were heavily integrated into each other's lives and shared a meal. Often it ends up meaning what you're saying, which is that people kind of know of each other. I personally like the term garden party polyamory as well, because I feel like it gives the connotation of everyone knowing of each other. We can all kind of gather for a party, but there's no expectation necessarily for being friends or being highly integrated into each other's lives.
Mm. Another term is parallel poly.
Parallel poly to me is that you have different partners that know of each other, but that those relationships never really interact with each other, that those relationships are in parallel. So, for example, I would think that if you were kind of doing parallel poly for your birthday, for example, you wouldn't have all your partners there.
Oh, that makes sense. And I feel like sometimes in parallel poly, the other partners don't want to know the other partner necessarily, or right. they don't want to know their meta. They don't really care to have a relationship with them.
I think the different styles of polyamory attract different kinds of people.
Yeah.
Right. Because when you talk about kitchen table polyamory or garden party polyamory, I feel like that tends to attract people who are very social, are kind of interested in the lives of their partners and their partners' partners. Whereas I think parallel poly appeals to other people who maybe have a very full life already and aren't really interested in integrating their life into their partners or even their partners' partners.
Right. Another term is solo poly, which means that a person can have multiple relationships, but their lifestyle is more singular, or they live more a single lifestyle. Like, they don't share finances with somebody. Yeah. They kind of treat each relationship as its own separate thing, not the traditional type of relationship style.
Yeah. I think solo poly is great for people who want to be very independent and want to keep either where they live, aren't really interested in nesting with any partners, maybe have roommates or things like that. Yeah, live a very independent lifestyle, but still want to have multiple partners.
Another example is where one person is monogamous and one person is polyamorous in the relationship. So they have said, okay, I'm okay with you dating other people, but I just want to have a relationship with this one person.
Yeah.
And that I've seen that many times where people are free to date another person. I mean, you could also call that open, but it's usually where like one person is monogamous and the other is polyamorous.
I would say that technically you and I were monopoly for a little bit too.
Yeah, at the beginning.
At the beginning, I was polyamorous and exploring that. And I even had a relationship with someone. And at the time, you were monogamous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it works.
Like it works.
The monopoly situation is very interesting because I think I've seen a pattern of people who are in the monopoly situation that can feel a little bit like bad. Like, oh man, I have all of these partners and my partner is monogamous. But I think ultimately what matters at the end of the day is mutual consent, right? And so
yeah, definitely.
I think that's really what's going to make a monopoly relationship either successful or not. All right, so the next term on our list is swinging. What's swinging?
Usually swinging is an open couple that is seeking other sexual partners, but might not be seeking an emotional connection with somebody.
Right.
So it usually tends to be sexual. So I feel like it's added to the list because you can be a swinger and be polyamorous.
I mean, there's a whole rabbit hole of other terms that we could go into that apply to swingers because there are different kind of swaps that swingers do and things like that. But I think it is important for it to be on our list of polyamory terms because I think, and I don't know, this is a personal like crusade of mine as well, because I just feel like I think while polyamory is not about sex, it doesn't mean that we should slut shame people in the polyamorous community who love sex. And
yeah.
So that's why, again, yeah, you can be polyamorous and a swinger. And so I think it's important to talk about the term, at least. Up next is relationship anarchist. And this is a personal favorite of mine because I feel like I identify a lot with relationship anarchy. There's a whole relationship anarchy manifesto, and I think it's important that we put that in the show notes for people to check out, because it's multiple paragraphs. It gets into the kind of the weeds of what relationship anarchy is. But I would say that on a fundamental level and on kind of a baseline level, relationship anarchy is about the fact that you should not rank your relationships, that love is an abundant resource, that it's not something that is limited, and that you get to customize your commitments with people. So relationship anarchy is the challenging of particular labels like boyfriend, girlfriend, partner, and actually saying, okay, what does this label mean to us in our relationship, in this relationship? And I personally love it because I love to talk to people and, you know, construct custom relationship agreements. It's a thing of mine.
Yeah, I think that relationship anarchy is something that appeals to so many people because you basically get to define how you want the relationship to be versus the traditional ways that a relationship is based on society's rules, how a relationship should be.
I also think that it appeals to me a lot because of my cult background. Because ever since I left Jehovah's Witnesses, I feel like my motto in life is to just question everything, is to question what everything means to me personally. That's what I love about relationship anarchy, is that it's about explicit agreements rather than implicit ones, where, you know, you could be on two different pages and not really know it.
Yeah. And I think hierarchy is a part of an aspect of that.
Yeah.
Where hierarchy is where, like, you kind of went into, there's ratings, I would say, or a person could have veto power,
right,
where they have some type of.
That should be on the list.
It should veto
be, that should
power.
Be on, should be on part list. Three. Veto power.
Yeah, where someone, but I don't really like that style because it's like basically it's taking the autonomy away from the two people involved in the relationship.
But I still think we should define it at some point.
Oh,
what
yeah.
veto power is.
Yeah. I mean, how would you define veto power?
Oh, we're just going into it. Well, I think so. Veto power is when, if I were dating someone, you would have the authority to say, no, I don't like that person. You need to not date them anymore. And I think a relationship anarchist would not ever agree to that because ultimately that's what relationship anarchy stresses, is the idea that there is no hierarchy to people. No relationship is more important than the other. And so how could one relationship define what is going to happen in another relationship that you have?
Yeah. And I feel like that's something that it's so good to talk about at the beginning.
Yeah, I think hierarchy is an important conversation to have with any person that you're potentially wanting to be partners with or seeing, because, again, we keep talking about the fact that these terms are very specific to the person that is using them. What someone thinks as hierarchy could to someone else not be hierarchy.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
And so it's very important to have these kinds of conversations with people because, yeah, you could be in a situation where you're dating someone or you're developing feelings for someone, but they have a hierarchical arrangement in their relationship. So now if they veto your relationship, you suddenly have your heart broken because someone else said that you couldn't date this person. So it's a very tricky situation. And I think that's why a lot of polyamorous people, I think it would seem, at least to me in the community, have tried to get away from hierarchy. But I think also, I wouldn't say that hierarchy is inherently bad. I think it's the fact that when people don't know what they're signing up to is when that doesn't make sense and it's wrong, I feel.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like that's why it's so important to talk about the terms and ask somebody, okay, how would you define that, to get their definition of it? Because you can have the complete opposite definition of the same word.
Yeah, We also wanted to cover one penis policy. What is a one penis policy?
So the one penis policy is basically
the OPP.
That's right. It's also referred to as OPP. But one penis policy is where usually a couple has, if one partner is seeking out the relationship, the couple says, oh, you can have another relationship, but it's only with women. Or there's that would be the one penis as the man's.
Right.
And so you can have other relationships, but only with women.
Yeah, I think that it's very important to highlight the inherent transphobia and homophobia that is associated with the one penis policy. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this can work in different contexts. I mean, it hasn't been unheard of that you will have the one pussy or one vagina policy, but I feel that that's very rare.
Right.
The one that I hear more of and most often is the one penis policy, which is, again, the penis is the key word in this term, because I think that what it implies is that relationships with women or with trans men aren't as valid mm-hmm. as the relationship with the penis. So yeah. it's a bummer of a term, honestly.
It is.
But it's one that needs to be defined, I think.
Yeah, because some people have that rule.
Yeah.
And you need to know about that if you're going to be in a relationship with someone.
Yeah.
That has that rule.
Yeah.
Or their partner has that rule. Another term is don't ask, don't tell.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Which we've all heard that before.
Yep.
But in a polyamorous relationship, it would mean like the other partner doesn't want to know about anything that's going on. So they don't ask or they don't tell.
How do you feel about don't ask, don't tell? Would you personally be in a don't ask, don't tell kind of dynamic?
I feel like that would be really difficult for me because I prefer the kitchen table where everyone knows each other.
Yeah.
Everyone is aware of who the other person is and at least has met them. I feel like when I have met another partner, it just makes me feel so much more safer or it makes me feel better because I know that person. I'm like, okay, I can put a face to the name and it just makes me feel more comfortable, more secure with myself.
I personally am an open book. I like to be very open and honest. So I don't feel like a don't ask, don't tell dynamic would work for me, but it's important to say that it's valid. It's a valid choice.
Yeah.
There are ways to do it in healthy ways. So it's just like anything else.
Yeah. And it's just like a lot of these terms may not be our preferred style or our preferred way of doing things, but they are out there in a community and we don't want to make anyone feel bad for a certain relationship style. It's just good to define it.
Right.
So that everyone is involved knows what's going on.
Right. We're not at church anymore. You're not a sinner.
And that's why I prefer to be open and honest about things because I like to know. I like to know the details. I'm a Gemini. I like to hear all the good stuff.
Yeah. Consensually, of course.
Yeah. That's true. Some other terms to know are polysaturated.
Polysaturated.
Which sometimes I feel
a favorite of mine because I feel like polysaturated is one of those things that people don't know they are.
Many times they don't know they are. But
what polysaturated?
Yeah, we have to define it first. Polysaturated is where someone says they are at capacity and they don't feel like they can take on any more relationships at the time.
Their dance card is full.
And that can also be at any number of partners. It doesn't necessarily have to mean like, oh, I've got too many partners. I can't do it anymore. They could have no partners.
Right.
Be like, I'm polysaturated right now and they just need to take a break maybe.
Right. Yeah. Some people have a very strict partner cap to prevent polysaturation. I think polysaturation is one of those topics that we could probably do a whole episode on, really.
Yeah.
To dive deep into like what to look out for, I would say.
And I feel like polysaturation can be a good thing when someone recognizes that they are saturated because they don't want their other partners to feel a certain type of way or feel left out because they're expending so much time with the other person.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. I think that polysaturation is definitely something that is great to be self-aware mm-hmm. of, because it's rough when you're polysaturated. You are not aware of it. You're starting things with people that then you realize you don't actually have the time or energy for.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I think a lot of new polyamorous people, we all kind of have that issue mm-hmm. is recognizing when we've kind of hit our cap and understanding that love is limitless, but time, energy, resources are not.
Right. And sometimes you don't even recognize it in yourself, like that you are at capacity.
Yeah.
But it's something that you're still learning, that I'm still learning how to recognize what it feels like to be polysaturated.
Yeah. Our last term is compersion, which just means feeling happy or excitement for seeing your partner be happy with their other partners.
Right. And I feel like that is more of a term that has been made for polyamory, because I wouldn't have heard that otherwise. I feel like we could go into a whole episode about compersion.
Yeah, I think it would be pretty easy to do a whole episode about it. I think the biggest thing for me, though, is you don't have to feel bad if you don't feel it. And I think that that's something important to talk about, is that, you know, yes, if you feel compersion, if you feel happy seeing your partners happy with other partners, great.
Yeah.
If you don't feel that, don't feel like you're bad at polyamory or you're not made to be polyamorous because you don't feel compersion.
Yeah, definitely. And you might not even feel it right away at the beginning. It might be something that develops later. So those were some of the terms that we came up with. I know there's so many more that we probably missed, but that just gives you a basic idea of polyamory.
Yeah. I mean, we could probably do another part on this. If there are any terms that, again, we missed, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you. hello@glampolyam.com. Where can the people find us on the internet, Kelm?
You can find us at TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, all at Glam Polyam.
Anywhere we'll be at Glam Polyam. Thank you so much for listening. If you know someone that might love our show,
please share it with them, as that's the best way for new people to find the podcast, and it would mean so much to us.
Thank you.